This is the Primal King podcast, but first, a quick message.
Crosso Ranch has raised premium beef for 5 generations, but we've always kept it to ourselves, but not anymore. You now have the ability to get ranch-raised USDA certified beef from our mountains in Idaho delivered directly to your dinner table. Don't settle for growth hormones, steroids, or imported beef on the store shelves anymore. Go to crossomeats.com right now to place your order. Your body and your taste buds will thank you for it. Even our girls think it's really yummy.
Bye, Crosso Meat. I love it.
Oh, Nene!
What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal King Podcast. This is episode number 83. All right, so this episode is kind of way different than anything that we've done in the past. And I wanted it to be this way because I wanted to really highlight this week kind of the liberation side of the three pillars of what we cover on the Primal King Podcast, right? The mindset side of this. Who better than someone who actually grew up in essentially a cult, spent most of his adult life in that, and then kind of broke out of that in the mindset that went into questioning things and seeing things different. And I know that most of you out there probably aren't in a cult, but the same line of thinking applies in a lot of things that are going on right now. So I'm super excited for you guys to be able to check this one out. All right, everybody, let's get started. So the question is this: how do we live the best life that we can with the limited amount of time that we get to be here? Is it by accumulating success and fame and fortune and everything else that society tells us that we need in order to be fulfilled? Or is it much more simple than that? My name's Derek Wilson. I'm the host of the Primal King Podcast, and we're going to be answering this as well as many other questions as we move forward. What is up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Primal King Podcast. Today, I'm super excited to talk to someone who had a very interesting upbringing, including actually being raised in what some would consider a little bit of a cult. He's been an entrepreneur since the early 90s, but lost everything in the market crash back in 2008. But rather than simply just starting over, he decided that he wanted the freedom that would allow him to be with his family and travel. So he didn't just start thinking out of the box. He burned the box, as he likes to say. That led him down the path of affiliate marketing and advertising online, and then opened up an agency that led to helping numerous clients, including people that simply wanted to quit their job, and now all the way up to businesses that are in the million to $100 million income range. Let me welcome on Mr. Joe Marfolio. Again, Joe, thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me. That's a great intro. Thanks.
Thanks. So we were just kind of chatting, and I guess maybe where we could start, because obviously you've gone on to do a lot of really awesome things and, you know, build up. Like, I know that if you're not watching this, maybe if you're listening to the podcast, Joe's got a whole wall full of decorations that in the ClickFunnels world, they call them 2 Comma Club Awards and then the 2 Comma Club X, which basically means that the guy's made like millions and millions of dollars in the online space. But you know, I know you grew up kind of maybe different than a lot of people. So maybe if we could start, Joe, just to kind of go back, like, you talked about kind of being in a cult, like, I know it was Jehovah's Witness, but maybe just so people understand where you started, how was like day to day, or what was that life like, maybe, to get us going?
Well, so when I grew up, I had a very different upbringing than most people. And if anyone listening to this is a Jehovah's Witness or intimately knows someone who is a Jehovah's Witness or has a family member that is, you know, they'll be able to relate what I'm going to say. But, you know, I lived in a space where, you know, I had, you know, my mom was Jehovah's Witness. I had 7 brothers and sisters and I was the second oldest, and she became a Jehovah's Witness when I was probably 5 years old. And my whole life changed at that moment. We went from, you know, no holidays. So we stopped celebrating Christmas, stopped celebrating birthdays. Our connection to our family wasn't like to my dad's side of the family, like my uncles and aunts. It didn't get fully cut off, but it got restricted a lot. And then our new family became the congregation, right? Or the Jehovah's Witnesses. And even in that religion, it's like they view that the end of the world's coming. Back then in the 80s, you know, they by the year 2000, you know, they were sure the end of the world's coming. So your whole life focus is devoted to going to what they call the meetings in Kingdom Hall, because they don't call it church, you know, at that time we were going 3 times a week, and then going what they call out in service, which is knocking on doors. So as someone goes through school, where other kids are thinking about going to college or what they want to do for a career, you're, as a young person, you're encouraged to get a job, part-time job, or work in construction, and then devote the rest of your time to full-time service, or what they call pioneering, which at that time was getting like 90 hours a month in, you know, of knocking on doors, you know, and that was, and then you worked to support yourself, you know, whatever time you had left. I think now they lowered that to 70 hours or something. But anyway, that was my whole life's goal. And so like when I graduated high school, one, it was like, I got a diploma, but it didn't, you know, it was like, I barely even got a diploma because I wasn't academically motivated. That wasn't where I was to go. And then I went to their headquarters, which they call Bethel, is up upstate New York. And I spent 5 years there. So like from when most people are going to college and doing stuff, like I was at this facility working construction for them, making $90 a month is what I would get paid. You know, they gave you room, board, and food, and you're just like working there doing whatever they need you to do. And then, you know, when I left, then I moved to California. I started to do what they call Pioneer, which is knock on doors, getting people in. And then I traveled around the world doing construction and other things for them. So my whole 20s was spent in like this full-time service to this organization. And the people in the organization are not bad people. Like if someone, I think they're good people. They're well-meaning. But it's like, if you're raised in, you know, in this bubble where it's like, this is how life is, then that's what you believe. I literally, you know, went through my life and you know, even school, like I didn't have any friends because in my school, there were no Jehovah's Witness kids, right? So imagine this, like, and I was in Long Island, it was a really big school. I mean, there was a couple thousand kids, I think, in the school. And it's like, you know, I remember specifically going from elementary school to junior high school. And like in the elementary school, you sit at lunch and, you know, you just sit with kids and your friends. And then I remember going into, I think it was junior high, and it was like, okay, now you sit with your friends. I remember walking in the lunchroom and not having anyone to sit with, cause I didn't know anyone. Like I didn't have any connection with any of them because you're allowed to like have associations where like, say we were in the same class, you know, I could talk to you, but I won't be going over your house after school. They don't want you playing sports. People who are not witnesses are considered worldly, and they use that term a lot. Like, well, that's worldly. And then what is, and this is what, when someone's trying to control a group or, you know, have control, the words are very powerful. Like we see it today, you know, all over with the social justice warriors and all this other stuff, words are powerful. So they turn the word worldly. So that meant that anyone's not a witness is worldly. Well, what is worldly? Well, that is someone that doesn't worship God, someone that in the end is probably not a good person. Don't trust them because they're going to screw you over. Like all these things attached to it. And so who's your safe people? It's like the people in your congregation, the people that you know. And this was a great way for the organization, which is a top-down organization, to basically control people because it's out of, you know, they work on guilt and basically fear, right? Fear that if you're caught not doing what you're supposed to be doing, like say you're out with some friends that aren't witnesses, you're gonna get in trouble, right? Because you're making God upset. You're making what they call Jehovah, that's his name in the Bible, right? His main names, and that's another word, right? Like the word association is like, instead of God, it's Jehovah. So you worship God, but I worship Jehovah. Now it's the same thing. But when you put that word on it, then it's like, makes me special that you're different than me. Because you only worship God, but I worship the true God or whatever. So like growing up, I didn't have a ton of social skills, right? Cause, and I always though never bought into the whole thing that the end of the world's coming. That don't worry about your future, you know, God's going to take care of it. So when I finally, you know, stopped, like I kind of got married in my early 30s and I started working for, you know, and I did, you know, I always hustled. I always had different jobs that I did that made really good money. You know, I remember living in California. I had an apartment on the beach and I fixed interiors of cars for car lots. Like I had different car lots I worked with. And, you know, at the time I was making $12,000-$15,000 a month working 2.5 days a week, which was great for me, you know, and I invested in real estate and, you know, bought some duplexes. And it's like in that world, that's a very fine line. Like if you're doing that too much, then it's like, oh, they'll look at you like, oh, you're greedy or you're materialistic or you just want money. But then if you reach a certain threshold where you've made a lot of money, then it's almost like the rules don't apply to you because, you know, you can go higher up in the organization. It's a weird structure, but, so it's like, I always had this struggle of working and making money and then feeling guilty about it and kind of like not making the money. Like, it's like a whole mental thing where I went like, I must have made and lost, you know, a couple million dollars twice. Cause it's like, you just go up. So it's like, I had that business. Then I stopped that. And then I had an import business where I imported travertine and granite from around the world. And that business went up and then the market crashed. And, you know, I sold that business. Then I got into remodeling foreclosures for the bank. So I always had these companies that would come up and down, but I never had like a long lasting company that just went straight through because of kind of this mentality of, you know, well, the end of the world's coming or there's a lot of guilt involved. And finally, what happened for me was I have four kids and over the last probably 10 years, you know, I started looking into it and I didn't really believe it. And if I could have, someone waved a magic wand and said you could leave, I would have left. But I couldn't leave because for me to leave, I would have lost everything. Meaning,
was your wife on board? Is that how you met her?
Yeah, like I met her. She was a witness, and basically, you know, your criteria for getting married is, oh, are you a good witness? Are you good? Oh, then you're a good match. Like, as a witness, you're not even allowed to really be alone with the other person. So the first time you're really alone with them is like when you're after you're married. So it's like, she was a witness, and you know, I think she knew I kind of was in and out, not fully believing it, but I put the mask on and I kind of played the role, like, which most people are doing. Like if you're listening to this and you're in my, you know, you don't believe it, but you're still going to meetings, you're doing the same, you know, they're doing the same thing. They're filling a role. So your life doesn't blow up. Meaning the minute I say, I don't believe this, then, you know, you're subject to disfellowshipping or disassociation, or you become worse than a worldly person. Meaning like the word they use is apostate, which is another powerful word that they use. And, because what apostate is someone who, is right. Like the worst person in the world. Right, like there's not,
you know, when you walk away from it, right? Not right, that you're unknowing, but
yeah, it's like, well, you talk about the organization, or you do this, or you say that, like you're just the worst person. So, like they give talks, like it's like be careful of apostates. Like it's amazing how a label can change someone's view of you in an instant, and so you're afraid of that. So it's like, well, and you're constantly weighing out, you know, is this worth it, right? Is it worth it to leave? Will I lose too much, or should I just stay and put up with this, you know, to not lose everything? Because the minute I say I'm leaving, then all my friends that I've made throughout my lifetime, and I, you know, and I don't have a ton of friends, but I have a few friends that are very close. And it's like, I would lose them in an instant. It would probably end my marriage. I could lose my kids. My kids could grow up as a Jehovah's Witness, get married to someone who's zealous and not even want me at the wedding, right? Like there's all these things that you basically are going to lose if you leave. So that's a thing that keeps people in. And what happened to me was it became too much. Like it cost me too much to stay because I couldn't keep going to the meetings and I couldn't keep pretending. Like I'm a pretty honest person. Like the way I feel is what I say. Like, you're going to know how I feel. I don't mince words that much. And it's like, I would sit at these meetings and be like, I don't believe this. And then it's like, I got to teach my kids this. And I remember one day I wasn't going to go to one of the meetings and my daughter was like, well, why aren't you going? You know? And I was like, I don't, you know, she, and like the view of me was that I was weak, that I just didn't, maybe I was lazy or I just didn't want to go. Because anyone who say they drop off, like say you stop going to meetings or don't go as much, the other label you have is that you're weak, right? So, oh, he's just weak or he's struggling. So now here my kids are looking at me like, even though I'm working, providing for my family, doing all this stuff, I'm less than or I'm weak. And then this guy at the Kingdom Hall who is an elder and could be like failing at taking care of his family, not even a nice guy, is looked up because he's doing good in the organization. And I was like, I don't want that. Like, I don't want my kids to think that of me. So I have to tell them like why, you know, this is why I'm, you know, this is the truth, right? The truth is, I remember telling it to my kids and I was so nervous. Like it took me 6 months or a year. Like I would struggle with it because I was like, man, you know, if I tell my kids this, what are they going to say? You know, are they going to, you know, go deeper into the organization? I told them, I said, I don't believe this. You know, I was like, your mom believes it. And if you believe it, you know, that's fine. You'll have a choice. I said, but I don't believe this anymore. So that's why I don't go to meetings. I said, I don't go to meetings because I'm lazy. I don't go to meetings because I don't even not believe in God. I just don't believe in what the witnesses say. And, you know, to my relief, they were relieved.
How old were they? Because
they were like, you know, oh, you know, that they had a choice. And
how old were your kids at that point?
Shoot, they had to be like 13, 11, 9.
So, I mean, they were old enough to understand, like they were getting old enough to where they probably understood it, right?
Yeah. They kind of understood, but you know, when you're a kid, you understand a lot of your life is what's around you. And it's like, we live in a pretty small town here in Colorado. So it's like, it's not like they have a lot of other influences around them. So it was like, that was pretty strong. And, but what I didn't do, and like, if anyone's listening to this in my situation, you know, I said, you know, I would, you know, this path worked for me. Is what I didn't do was I didn't tell them the people, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses are bad, or this is a cult, or you have to get out of this, or this is terrible, or so-and-so is bad, or so-and-so is this. And, you know, just think about everything that's being told and see if it's right. Because like my, you know, like I said, I had 7 brothers and sisters, and my, 2 of my brothers were disfellowshipped, which means they were kicked out, you know, not to be talked to when they were 17. And so was my sister. So it's like, I didn't go to my 2 brothers' weddings or my sister's wedding. And this is a big Italian family in New York. You know, they have pictures of the wedding and I wasn't there. You know, and this was years ago, but it's like when we went back to New York, you know, they would see, you know, I still, you know, at that time, because my, like, I kind of skipping ahead, but it's like, we, you know, I lived in California, just to give you some context. I lived in California where I had my import business. I did the foreclosures. And then in 2013, I moved to Costa Rica with my wife and 3 kids for a year. Then we got pregnant. My wife got pregnant. And then we moved to New York because I didn't want to go back to California for a year and a half. And then we moved to Colorado. So the time we were in New York, I was already like pretty much done with the witnesses. So when I went back to New York, I kind of reconnected with my brothers and my sister because we, you know, for probably 10 years, we hardly ever talked. And my kids saw that, like they saw that, hey, why will Aunt Christine, who's, she's a witness, right? Why won't she talk to Uncle Jimmy? Right. Like, why is there this friction? Why is there this? And I said, well, does that make sense to you? Does this really seem like loving? And they said, no. So it's like, I just had them like think things through for themselves. But really for me in the end, when I finally just said I'm done, it was because of my kids, because I wanted to give them a chance at making a choice for their own life. I didn't want them growing up thinking the end of the world's around the corner. Don't worry about school. Don't, you know, go get some, you know, I didn't want them to have that. I wanted them to see the world for what it is and to kind of be able to make their own choices. And it cost me everything to do that. Like it was, you know, I probably lost every friend I had. You know, it, because it's, cause you can't, I don't know. It's like someone explained it like this to me. It makes a lot of sense. Is when you're in a control group like that, you're in this bubble. And when you're in this bubble, people can attack you from the outside and it just deflects, right? It's not like, you know, if you're never a witness and you said something about witnesses, it's not going to break that bubble. But if someone inside stands up and says, hey, maybe what we're doing here, something's wrong, then it makes everyone else in the bubble start to question it. So you have to remove that person as fast as you can so he doesn't get other people thinking about what they're doing. So that's kind of how it is. Like, so if you stand up and say, hey, I don't believe this anymore, it's like, okay, we can't associate with him anymore, or he's got to be. And, you know, and that's.
What about your marriage? Did you stay together?
You know, that's a hard, like it's, you know, we did for a long time. Right now we're not together, but you know, we'll see what happens. It's hard to, you know, it's hard to stay together when someone leaves the organization. Now the organization itself, they don't like divorce, but if I'm saying, okay, I don't believe this, you know, I don't care if my kids, you know, I want my kids to connect with my disfellowship family. I want them to have friends in school. I want them to be in sports. I want them to think about college. I don't really want them to be a witness. You know, even though I'm not saying you can't be a witness, like as like you could give them your view, I'll give them my view and they make their choice. Like it doesn't fit, because then it's like, there's an aggressive relationship where it's like, you know, it doesn't work because I'm the bad guy, right? I'm the apostate living in the house. I'm the guy tearing the kids away from the truth and they're all going to die, you know, Armageddon, because they're not witnesses. And so it's like, it's a balancing act. And I've never really talked about it in this much depth, because it's like, like even this interview, if someone watches it, could cause a problem, even though I'm not even a witness anymore. Because there's different levels. Like, it's like, okay, if you talk about the organization, then you're in a, you know, then you're not just inactive. You're like, it goes deeper to where it's like, okay, you know, we have to avoid you or the, whatever. But, I don't know, for me growing up that way, I think it made me very agile in a lot of areas of my life, even in business and even being able to, because, you know, for me, like it was like, you know, I didn't go to college. I didn't have that traditional thing where it's like, okay, you're going to get a job. It was always like, I got to make a quick buck, or I got to make a dollar here so I can keep going out in service or doing this. So it was like, I was able to find different niches and different jobs and work through things to make as much money as I can in the shortest amount of time. And, you know, and it wasn't like it was all bad. There was good things I mean, the thing about it is it's a very structured way to grow up. It's fundamental, it's like a Christian fundamentalist, like they believe exactly what the Bible says. So you have generally good morals and things like that. I don't know. So that's, I mean, it's a lot more than that, but it's like, that's about where it's, yeah.
So, and one of the reasons why, I wanted to connect with you and bring you on is because once you've gone through all of this and like, I mean, it seems like it's still something that you kind of wrestle with even now, right? But I mean, when you look out and you see what's going on in our country, because it's like, okay, obviously you went through this at kind of a micro level, right? Like you within kind of this religion or organization. And I've seen you speak out a lot over the last several months or maybe even year now about kind of some of the cult-like stuff that maybe you saw growing up and what you've been through now almost being used for different causes. And so like, maybe if you wouldn't mind, Joe, would you kind of like explain to people, because one of the podcasts I did shortly after, and I don't like to go like super political, but political is everything's political now, right? And so one of the podcasts that I did do on a solo episode shortly after the pandemic stuff started, because again, coming from a place of high ticket sales and just sales background, we all know fear is a huge motivator. It will make people pull out a credit card and put a lot of money on things that, if someone came to you and said right now your child is sick and the only way to get over it is to come up with $100,000, who wouldn't do everything in their power to do it, right? That fear of losing your child, anybody would do anything that they could. But fear can also be a good controlling factor, right? It can motivate people to do things they normally wouldn't. And so that was kind of the podcast that I did shortly after all the lockdowns and everything else started. It's like, guys, it's cool to be scared. Like everybody maybe is a little scared about this virus and what's going on, but you can't be irrational because of that fear. And I know that sometimes in some of these fundamentalist places, cults, things like that throughout history, fear is a big way to create people from thinking clearly, right? And so I know that you've been an advocate of that. And so maybe if you wouldn't mind again, like, would you kind of maybe show people some examples of what maybe you've seen, whether it be the government or health officials, stuff that maybe stuck out to you coming from the background that you come from?
Yeah, I mean, fear is, like, in my opinion, religion is a control group, right? And they base everything on fear. If it's heaven or hell or whatever, like fear is the greatest control mechanism. And people are followers. Whether you like it or not, most people are just followers and they're sheep. And the Bible calls them sheep, right? I'm a shepherd. You're my sheep. Follow what I say. And it's like, so they don't want to think about it. And what I saw, like, I've seen over the last few years is, what's the best way to control people is through fear and division, right? So like when you're in a religion, you're divided too. I mean, go throughout history, right? Like if you look at history and you look at people like Protestants and Catholics and like all these people, they fight each other and they believe almost the same thing, 99% of the same thing, but this one thing they don't believe. So they want to kill each other because you're a pagan, you're this. And they're not even pagan. They just believe a different part of the Bible. Like they just believe a little. Same thing today, right? You have all these religions that even Jehovah's Witnesses, you almost believe pretty much the same thing, but there's a couple of different things. So it's like, we're different. So like there's that division. And then there's that fear that, these other people are evil, are bad and pagan, whatever, right? Like, and even that calling someone else a pagan doesn't even make sense if you truly understood what a pagan was. But in the world today, it's like we're divided and it's all fear. It's like, and it's done intentionally. You have conservatives, like you have liberals, like, okay, so if you don't want to wear a mask, you must be a Trump loving, gun loving racist, and if you want to wear a mask, then you must be, a leftist, no backbone, whatever, like, And there's labels, but the truth is, like, where I live is one of the most liberal areas. I think I don't even know how I ended up here. And it's insane, right? How left these people are. Like, there was Biden signs everywhere, which a lot of these people make a lot of money and are smart. And I can't understand why, they do that. But a lot of these people before the pandemic, I knew them and I hung out with them. And then we didn't talk politics, but we had a good time because they had families. They cared about their kids. They wanted their kids to grow up, you know, in a safe environment, you know, and they are good people. But the minute that they become Biden supporters or left, and they say, well, you're conservative or you vote for Trump. Well, then there are fractures there. And it's like, well, you're this and I'm this. We're basically the same friends. We basically want the same thing for our family, but that division is there. So now we're on opposite sides. Now, my view of that person doesn't come from who that person is. It comes from what I think that person is by what they believe. And the same thing for them, for me. And I truly believe, like, in this country, we've been divided on purpose. Like, this is not an accident. Like, this is not an accident because you can control a population. The only way you can control a population is if you divide it, right? And if they're divided, they're too busy fighting with each other than going against the real people who are in control and putting all these things in place. And I think when you talk about confirmation bias, it, you know, a simple confirmation bias is like, if I tell you, like, I would say this too about even the religion I was in, what I was in. So if I tell you a certain amount of truths, like undeniable truths, you'll listen to anything I say. So like when people first become Jehovah's Witnesses, they say, oh, do you know that Jesus didn't die on December 25th? Which he didn't, right? He didn't. Yeah. That comes from it's actually a pagan holiday, like the Norse and the tree in your house. Like, that's a totally pagan holiday. The December 25th, you can look it up in the Catholic Encyclopedia, right? But now if you tell me that and I'm apt to listen to you because I want to know the truth about the Bible, I'm going to say, holy moly, really? No one else has told me that. Or I tell you another truth, right? That you've never heard of before, or that, you know, and I tell you enough of these, you're going to say, okay, he speaks the truth. And then I could tell you all kinds of lies, or all kinds of, maybe not, you know, exaggerations. And you're going to believe me because you're basing your belief on these other truths that I told you. And so, like, even with the witnesses, it was like, there was, well, no one, everyone else celebrates Christmas. So you like that's how they reference what is true. Not is what they're telling me right now true. So you have all these people watching the news and they tune into the news like the news is actually telling you accurate information and they're not biased. Now, maybe 30 years ago, they weren't biased, and maybe 30 years ago, they gave the news. So they have this stature of, okay, well, they said it, so that must be important. Like, this is what's fed to us. They said it. So now they sit there and they watch the news and it's like, oh, well, they're saying this, so it must be important. And even if it makes no damn sense at all, they're still going to believe it because their confirmation bias is that what comes out of the TV is news. The other thing that's been done in citizen, you know, done, I think, since the 80s, and I think a lot of this has been not by accident, is the destruction of the family. And a major component of this is Disney. I think Disney is horrible. And Nickelodeon and a lot of the shows, if you notice, from the 80s, it started with Married with Children and it just kind of evolved to where the dad's an idiot. Now, this is almost every Disney show. The dad's a complete baboon of a moron. The mom's a little smarter than the dad, but she's still not very smart. And the smartest people are the kids. And it's actually the destruction of the nuclear family. And this is done through almost every TV show you watch, you know, through kids shows, like if they watch Disney, even teen shows, and and they say it's funny, but it's a messaging because we're subconsciously feeding this into our mind. So I've seen men act like buffoons and it's like, why, you know, in their family, because I think that's how they think they're supposed to act because they watch on TV. And it's subconscious because it's like hitting us all the time. Same thing with masculinity. I mean, it's been attacked forever. Like, throughout, you know, what makes a strong country? What makes a strong society? A strong head of a family, an anchor, The father is the anchor. The father is the protector. The father is the provider. The father is where the buck stops, right? He's the one that protects his family because he's, you know, it doesn't mean that the wife is weak or weaker than the husband. It just, that's the husband's role. The wife's role is different. And when you have this strong family structure, you have a strong society, and you're not going to be able to do things like the and control a family like that, right? Like a side like that. So, but if you break that structure, if you break the father down to where he's inconsequential or his masculinity is toxic, like how dare he try to take care of the, like, then you have people who have no one to turn to. And who do they turn to? They turn to the government, or they turn to the TV, or they turn to movie stars. And, you know, I was just watching this show. It was some show on Netflix. It was called Good Girls. It was a show about, the premise was like these three housewives rob a bank and they get involved with all the stuff. And it was a series, and I'm watching this series and I'm like, throughout that whole series, every man in that series, except for the criminal, right? The one guy who was like a criminal or whatever, but every other man in that series was a beta man. Like basically either he was weak, he was confused. The women had to tell him what to do, right? And the women weren't like, it's this whole messaging that's out there in society. And I don't know if I'm getting off track, but no, what I think is like,
that's something that's super interesting. So me and my wife were having this conversation the other day when it comes to the programming and stuff like that. Now, I'm probably going to take heat for saying this, but I don't mean it in a bad way to anybody. But there's so many times I've noticed you'll start watching a show, right? Maybe you'll get hooked on it, Netflix, whatever, on TV. And then season two, halfway through season one, it's like, man, this is a hell of a show. And then what ends up happening is you end up having characters that come in that are gay. Now, again, I don't care if someone is gay. I literally couldn't give two shits left if someone is gay. But I find it fascinating because we'd started watching this show on Netflix, and I mean, really good, interesting show. And then it was like two seasons in, it's just full girl on girl action, man. And it's like, they're getting after it. And it was just kind of like, where did that come from? But then it's like, man, I think back about so many shows now. And again, I don't care what people do, who people sleep with. I mean, I'm probably right down the libertarian road on most of this stuff, but I do have observations, and I find it fascinating that it's like, why was that not in episode one? Well, because in episode one, it's going to chase some people off that maybe wouldn't have been open-minded enough to be watching this show long enough to, let's face it, be programmed that this isn't a big deal. Again, I don't care. But I mean, have you noticed that? And is that just me being like some freaking bigot? No. Literally don't care, but I just find it fascinating.
It's the breakdown of the nuclear family, right? Like, again, I don't care people's lifestyles or lifestyle, but it is done intentionally on every show. Like, I remember watching a show, Vikings, and I was like, this is a good show. And then like in the middle of this, like the fourth season, it's like the main character is now a lesbian with some woman who like it was out of whatever. It was out of sync for the show. Like,
just, yeah, that's the way this show was too. Yeah. It's called the 100. I don't know if you've ever seen it. I guess it's an older show, but it was like she had been hooking up with a guy, kind of had a boyfriend earlier on. And then it was just full on like, you know, girl on girl stuff going on. And it was just like, okay, that's kind of weird. And maybe that was it, but maybe it's like, why do they wait so long to really suck you into these shows and then like start introducing this stuff? You know, it's just odd to me.
Yeah. Cause it'll turn off a lot, you know, cause yeah, like you said, like it's a slow conditioning to where you don't even realize it. And I think what it is, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, is like, I'm not in a religion, right? I think the Bible is accurate. I think there are definitely good spirits, bad spirits. The Bible, if you look at who created the canon that you are reading right now, that Bible in your hand, who put that Bible together, that canon that you're reading? It was the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church is more demonic than it is good, I think. But they put that Bible together that you're reading. Okay, so there's things that were left out. There's probably things that were changed. But I think the essence in the Bible, I think there's amazing things in there for humans. And I think that people that follow, you know, some kind of religious or some kind of spiritual path have stronger families, right? Like, and because they, you know, like even growing up as a witness, it was, you know, the man was the head of the house and the woman and the kids, and you had a family structure where the kids, you know, they obeyed their parents. Like they didn't challenge their parents at 11 years old and say, I don't want to do this. I'm in charge. No, the parent was in charge. And then it was a very traditional upbringing that doesn't exist anymore. And part of that is because of the medium, because of TV, because it's been broken down to where now it's like, oh, I have a teenager and they're out of control. Well, because they're a teenager and they're just it's how they're raised. It's what they see. But it's like when you have that breakdown, I don't know. It's like I was saying, like you can insert whatever you want. Now, I think like that stuff, like it counteracts the Bible and the Christian. So like what they're doing now is they're labeling anyone who worships God or in the Bible or is Christian as bad. Like you're being labeled as bad, as racist, as someone that's not good. I don't know. I think it's getting worse and worse. Yeah. And I don't know, like the whole thing about what they interject in these movies is, I think that's one component. Another component is like how kids treat their parents, how people treat each other in the shows, or I think that it's why does every show have massive killing, gory killing? Like it started off where, oh, a little bit. Well, now you can watch a show, even these Marvel shows or these where they're killing, you can't even count how many people they've killed. And so it's like indoctrinating us and our to accept certain things. And I don't know, but what it does is if you don't critically think and sit there and watch a show and say, what am I watching? What message is this telling me? Then you're going to be subject to accepting that message and accepting what you're told and accepting that, hey, you better wear that mask. And if that person doesn't wear that mask, there's something wrong with them. Like that's the message, but it's like the mask doesn't do anything. It even says on the side of the box, right? But people believe it. And so it's too much effort for them to think and say, wait, does this mask really work? You know, should I really wear this mask? It's just easier for them to put it on. Yeah. And,
One thing that I would love to get your take on, because obviously we're kind of running up against it here, but so you go through and you said you were in the church for like 40 years, basically, right? Right, yeah. In there.
Yeah.
So it sounds like it was kind of a process, but what I'm always fascinated about is obviously there's a lot going on. And I think that there's a lot of herd mentality going on in our country right now. And I think there's a lot of people just not willing to think free. And that's one of the biggest reasons why I did this podcast, was to get people to view things differently, right? To ask questions, question everything. That I'm huge on that, question everything all the time. And if it serves you, it'll enforce it. And if it doesn't serve you, you can get rid of it. But first you have to question it. So for you, like if you could give someone some advice, maybe they're locked into the news cycle and they think that, man, I'm a racist, I'm a bigot, I'm a this and I'm a that. Like, what does someone do to maybe like take a step back and kind of maybe take your example of what you went through to be able to like, be like, okay, how do I reassess where I'm at with everything?
You know, I would just say you have to step back and remove all your bias. And that's what confirmation bias is your bias to something. So remove it all. Right? Remove it. So like for me to leave the witness and say, okay, let's say I wasn't born a witness. Let's say I wasn't this, I wasn't that. Say I wasn't going to lose all my friends. Let's lay this out. And where is the truth there? You know, and look at your beliefs that way. If you believe that wearing a mask is going to save the world, stop and say, okay, let's say that I, why do I believe this? Where is this information? What facts am I following to say that this is true? And then, you know, then you could come out of it with a different perspective if you're looking at it from a third party. If you're in it, you're emotional, your emotions are involved, you don't have any logic. Same thing, I tell people, like even with like Trump, like I was never a big fan of Trump. I never liked him. But it's like I voted for him because it was what it was. But it's like I didn't have a bias that he was sent from Jesus to save the world. Like I knew who he was, what, you know, and it was a wait, well, who, is it him? Right. Like it's the best option. So, okay, we go here, but it's like, it's not having this view that it's like, nope, anything this person does is right. Or anything this, it's like just stopping and questioning and looking at everything.
So that's something that I love the fact that you brought up, because there's always this argument of, if you support Trump, oh, so you endorse any of his sexual misconduct allegations. So you endorse the fact that he did this or that. No, I endorse the fact that I think he's going to be a better president than the other option available to me right now. That's what I endorse. Someone who's going to want to tax me less, you know, leave my guns alone, do stuff like that. It lines up with my values more. All the other stuff, like, I'm sorry, I don't like that. Like, and it's so funny how we are at a point to where if you accept one thing, you have to accept everything along those same lines.
Yeah. And that's what's been set up. Like it's all or nothing. And the truth is, like with Trump is he didn't, you know, he hurt himself more than he helped himself on some of the things, the way he spoke to people and things he said. But the point is he was open. Like he reminds me of a typical New Yorker. Like he's open. He's like, hey, this is what it is, who I am. Or all these other guys, they're doing the same thing or worse, but they just hide it really well.
Yep.
And he's like an open book, like this is what I'm doing. And but like to go back to what you said, it's like, yeah, there's things I don't like about him. But what this choice was the best, you know, this is the best option for what, you know, for what I believe and what I want to do. But it's all or nothing. It's like, okay, and that's the way it is, because how do you come together and get everyone to say, hey, this pandemic, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
They're putting in control mechanisms. They're tracking, they're doing all these things that aren't right. Right. Cause that's what was happening. If you look at what happened for George Floyd, people were starting to protest the lockdowns. Like they were just protesting the lockdowns in different capitals. And people were coming together, you know, right? Like it wasn't a right or left thing anymore. It was people at small businesses were like, hey, we got to open up. And then this George Floyd thing happened, boom, exploded, yep. And which was, you know, exploded everything, which was fueled by the media, which I think Black Lives Matter, you know, all this stuff was fueled this huge separation. And then it just made it this, okay, you're racist if you don't want to wear a mask, you're this. And they were able to push people to their sides even further. To where now it's like, you know, I don't even comment on Facebook anymore because it's just, you know, people just make assumptions about who you are by a little thing. And you have a country that's not, you know, that's divided, that's not together. And how easy it is to have Biden, all these people that are doing these things that are just destroying the country, they're not being confronted because everyone's too divided.
I know it really is to me kind of a scary time because of that division. Like I don't really worry about a lot of things as far as our country is concerned, but I feel like we've been almost pushed so far to our separate corners that there's not a lot that binds us together. And so I hope it's something that we can come back from. I know we got to wrap it up here. So this has been an awesome episode, Joe. This is honestly completely different than any other topic I've covered. And that's exactly why I wanted to talk with you, because I think, you know, I talk a lot about kind of liberation with the mindset, lifestyle, kind of the way people live. But the liberation of the mindset to me is always fascinating, whether it's somebody growing up poor and becoming wealthy because of changing their beliefs, or whether it's someone growing up maybe the way that you did and seeing the world different now. Just that process is absolutely fascinating to me. To kind of hit the third pillar to wrap it up here. Obviously you've gone through some crazy things, right? And you've been able to make a lot of money and you've lost a lot of money, and now you've made it a lot again and you have clients and everything else. I guess as you look back, kind of the third pillar of what I like to cover on the podcast is legacy. So, I mean, years from now, Joe, like, what do you want your legacy to be?
Like for me, it's, you know, like I said, that think outside the box. I have that saying, burn the box, or I have a Facebook group, burn the box, which I don't post it much lately, but it's like the whole premise is we put ourselves in our own confines. And, you know, I've taught people how to make money online and mindset. And what I saw over the years is people would become, and they would be in this box, and they would move, you know, outside the box. I'm like, I'm outside the box, but they put themselves in a bigger box and they still have limitations. So they move out of the smaller limitations and then they move into a bigger box, but they still put limitations on themselves. And my thing is like, burn the box and get rid of the limitations. You could do whatever, you can do whatever you want to do. Really, I mean, almost if you put your mind to it, but we keep ourselves in like this mental prison. And, you know, I think for me, it's just helping as many people as I can to kind of critically think where they're at and, you know, systematically go after what they want and remove that voice in their head that says they can't do it. Because I think what happens is a lot of people walk towards their goals and then they have that voice in their head that's pulling them back like, oh, you're really not going to be able to do it, or it's not going to work for you. And they kind of, they lose their steam and they stop, where it's like, if you have that mindset that, yeah, I can do it, like I'm going to do it and I'm going to remove these limitations and I'm going to see what these limitations are. Right. And I'm going to be able to move forward. So it's like, that's, I mean, I don't know. That's what I kind of, I try to help people with, because like, for me, like, it's never too late. Like, I don't know, you know, I didn't start making money till I was in my early 30s, right? Like, I didn't go to college. I didn't have anything, you know, and I've made it and lost it a number of times. Like, you can do it. I mean, look at Russell Brunson. He went from zero to $1 billion company in 5 years. Crazy. That's not a long time, right? That's not a long time. And like, you could do a lot. And what's that saying? Like, people overestimate what they can do in a year and underestimate what they can do in 10 years. And what it is you can do a lot if you know, if you don't stop,
I guess. Well, I love it. I love the conversation today, Joe. I know we could probably go on for a lot longer. It's just great stuff. For anybody that wants to find you, I know that right now you're really only taking on kind of higher level clients, but if they do maybe want to follow you along or kind of, you know, hear from you more often after listening to this, where can they find you?
I mean, I got my Facebook group, Burn the Box, or, you know, on my Facebook page. That's probably the best way right now.
Okay.
You're
pretty low key, aren't you?
Yeah.
Pretty much. No, that's good stuff. I know people will love it. So you guys can check that out on the Facebook side, Burn the Box. Outside of that, Joe, it's been a real pleasure, man. I appreciate you coming on.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of the Primal King Podcast. There's one thing that I will ask you to do. Please make sure that you are subscribed to the show so you get all of the new episodes coming out. Also, please make sure that you rate and review the show so that way other people can have access to this podcast, to this content, and this community. Again, thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next time.